Blog Talk Radio.
You know I love you, right?
Love you too.
Ain't nobody got what we got.
No, no. Wanna be with my baby.
Yes. Shed blood from the concrete, baby. Don't get no better than this.
Reality and Relationships, and I am your host, K.L. Belvin. Yes, we were off last week, but we were not going to miss tonight with it being the Christmas season. And when I say we, I have to include my sexy and very much so pregnant wife, Tiffany Braxton Belvin. Are you there, love?
I'm here.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. You gotta be here. Yeah, she got to be on. I'm saying she's the one that came up with tonight's topic. We ain't going to talk about it because she's been getting at me for about 2 weeks. And you guys that tuned in last week and missed us last week, well, Tiff is in some pain, so we're trying to ride out these last 12 weeks. It's not going to be easy, but we're going to do what we got to do. The baby is moving and the body is changing, and all I can do is just sit back and watch it all happen. and just try to be the chauffeur. Even though Tiff puts information on Facebook, I don't think people really need to know. But
you know, I'm going to share. I'm going to
share. We're not
going to
talk about
how
this just yet.
My loving husband, how my loving husband has really, really done his part with being supportive and helping me through this. Because when I say pain is, I don't even know where to start.
Let's start there because, you're home now. So what has the last 2 weeks been like? You know, we normally start off the show with talking about what the week's been like. So what has the last 2 weeks been like for you in a very highly pregnant state with 12 weeks now, right? We have 12 weeks or a little 11 and a half weeks?
We have 11 weeks to go. As of today, we have 11 weeks to go. And I'm doing the countdown, and I've been doing it ever since our last visit to the hospital, because the doctor informed me because of a fibroid condition I had pre-pregnancy, it's now affecting me as the pregnancy progresses. And I was having pain from that, which from things I've read, and Kale says I read too much, but I read to be informed, but I also read in order not to panic. Because I don't want to be one of those patients, because this is my first time that is calling the doctor all the time for every little thing. So I do read to get an idea of what I'm experiencing and what could possibly happen. And yes, we had two occasions where we had to go to the hospital because I was having contractions. And right now I'm on bed rest. So with the exception of maybe getting up to eat, use the bathroom, and wash, most of the time I'm laying down on the chaise. I can't even sleep in our bed anymore. So today is the 26th. This will make the 10th day in a row that I have not been able to sleep in a bed because the bed is too firm, and it actually makes my pelvis hurt. So I sleep on the chaise because the chaise gives more cushion. And basically, since I've been sleeping on the chaise, I've been much, much more comfortable. But then I developed a situation of constipation. Constipation comes with pregnancy. That's one of the symptoms that come along, because as a baby begins to grow, your digestive system gets compressed. So your intestines, your stomach, everything starts to move up into your rib cage. So it's very hard for the food to digest. So that was giving me a different type of pain than the fibroid pain. Then last Wednesday is when a different type of pain started. And you start to realize that pain doesn't feel like that pain. And it continued into Thursday, and it got worse. So I realized early in the day that it wasn't going away. So that's when we contacted Rich and Lavina of GQ Palace to let them know that I wouldn't be able to do the show. Because normally, if it's a slight pain, I'm dealing with it, I can get through it. But this is a pain that it radiated. It was on the right side. It radiated. It felt like I was on fire, like my stomach was on fire from inside. And it was so funny that every time the baby would move to that location, it made it even worse. I literally had to turn the Pandora on my phone to play the music and put it on the other side of my stomach so that the baby would move over. And she would. It was so funny. But to get her to not be in that position, because it just made the pain even worse. And I learned that I had strained the ligament, so I had to take some acetaminophen in order to start making the pain go away. So I was actually in pain, I would say, for about 5 days before the pain subsided. And even now, it doesn't hurt as much as it did, but I'm still a little bit sore. So I'm taking one day at a time. Like I said, I'm doing a countdown. I'm really looking forward to it. I have to say, because I had a maternity buddy, Bianca Fly, from the Bianca Fly radio show. She just had her baby Christmas Day, she and her husband, and I have to say congratulations to them. They had a little girl named Nala, and she's so adorable. They posted a picture on Facebook. So congratulations to Bianca Fly and her husband on their little girl that they had on Christmas Day. But other than that, I'm feeling much, much better, I have to say.
Well, that's a wonderful thing. And I am most happy that we are where we are and that you're feeling better. And, you know, I want folks to know we never cancel unless it's just something out of the ordinary, because we love doing this each week. And we love being here. We love trying to give out the information. So it was just hectic. And let me tell all the fathers and all the boyfriends and all the whatever, you know, if you want to consider yourself a baby daddy, that's on you. That's your loss. You know, we can't have the internal feeling that the mother has. This is your time to get connected to your child who is not here yet, and how you do things for your woman, how you do things for your wife, the preparation. Because after a while, your anticipation builds as much as the mother does. Now, like I said, you don't have the physical connection. And even though I have other children, means nothing, and not saying that they don't mean anything. The situation means nothing in comparison to going through this with Tiffany and waiting. And it's like a form of Christmas. I'm excited too. I can't wait to hold my daughter and to see my daughter, and I want to make sure everything's all right. I asked Tiff 6, 7, 8, 10, 15 times, "You okay? Are you all right? Need anything?" Because my job is to try to make her as comfortable as possible, do all the things necessary, and if it means that I have to give her an enema, yeah, I said it. Ill. These are the things that you do. For your wife.
Yes, my husband gave me an enema, and I appreciate it so much.
Make her feel comfortable, and it did, as if I got to run out to the store, if I got to do whatever. These are the things that you do to take care of your significant other, because this is the bonding process. This is what helps you to, as parents, when the baby gets here, to have established roles and the going back and forth, even dealing with the dog. You know, we have a strategy, even a plan, when everybody says what they're worried about, how the puppy is going to react with the new baby coming into the house. Well, I have experience with that. I had a 50-pound pit bull when my sons were born from my former marriage, and we had no problems. My boys would actually jump on his back and try to ride him, and he never once tried to bite him, because we incorporated him and my sons together. So it was never like the dog was pushed on the outside and not being allowed to be involved in what's going on. And we have the same plan in place for Storm. So when KL gets here, Storm can sniff and check her out and do all the things that he does currently, and then he'll go about his business. He just wants to be involved. Most animals do. And most animals are smart enough to not to try to harm the new being inside the household if the new being is made to be part of the pack. A lot of people, this is where, when Tiff mentioned earlier about reading and that having information, that was one of the things that I did years ago, was to learn how do you incorporate an animal into your situation. Often folks get so enamored with the baby, they totally forget about the dog. The dog has feelings too, and it doesn't have a big enough brain to process the changes, so it starts to hate the thing that caused the change, where you can change. So that's just my little dog tip. My week has been good. I'm on vacation. I had a birthday. I turned 46 years young.
Happy birthday.
And, thank you. And it has been a change. Thank you. Thank you so much. You know, it's funny looking at how my students reacted to learn about my birthday, but a lot of the adults were like, "How come you never told us that it was your birthday?" And I realized I am somewhat antisocial. Many of you may not believe that, but okay, maybe I'm very antisocial. I simply like, when I'm at work, to get the work done. I'm not there to make friends. I'm there to get the job done if I am friendly. But if I don't make friends, I'm okay, because too often I have found people don't know how to keep that line separated. It starts to blur when you become overtly friendly with folks, or when people start to think you're friends. And then when things start to turn negative, you know, I take friendship very seriously. It's not that I don't want friends, but I don't want the friendship to get in the way of the business, because we still got work to do. This is still work. And so I keep the two separated, but I am learning. And now at this point, creeping in so close to 50, with the changes that I wanted to make, and I'm not waiting for the new year, I've started making those changes actually early in the week, this weekend, is that I am attempting to be more social and more open. But that also meant carving away a lot of dead weight. Folks that were connected to me but actually have never done anything for me. Connected to me but have never spoken to me. I also had to reduce, with my 46th birthday, one of the things, and I think we all reflect once we have a birthday, but for me, I started to reflect on this year, and I wasn't waiting to 2014. I started the necessary changes this weekend. So I've hit the gym Tuesday. I hit the gym today, put in my hour of cardio, and I'll hit the gym tomorrow, and I'll hit the gym the day after that. Yes, I took Christmas off, and I think if the gym had been open Christmas night, I might have went. That's my thing for me, is to make sure that I am doing the things necessary to put my life in the order that I want it to be. I'm not waiting on somebody else, and I'm definitely not waiting until I get sick to where I'm forced to have to do some things, because then I can't enjoy it. So I actually enjoy the gym. Today, that hour was rough. I got to about 45 minutes. I was ready to quit, but I said, I posted in a group that I am in, I am going to do an hour. So I did an hour, and the pain wasn't that bad. And so, cool, and I'll do an hour tomorrow. That's really it. It's just really time to do more, talk less. Now, of course, we're on a radio show that we got to talk, so I'm going to talk about it. But just in general, I am attempting to be more of the ministry that I talk about. So with my videos, with the stuff that I post online, it is designed to now let people in closer to me so they can learn from me. So I cannot be antisocial while trying to serve the Lord the way that I'm trying to serve. I've also broken my life down to three things. I'll give them to you real quick. One, fitness and workouts. Two, spiritual and faith workouts. And writing and recording my work. That is it. I do those three things, and I push myself into those three things the way I am attempting to. Every other aspect of my life will be fortified in some way, somehow. If my fitness, if my spiritual life, and my writing, and my motivational life are all strong, it will affect every other aspect of my life. So what I would say to anyone listening, consider the one or two or three things that you need to focus on. That's it. Close out the rest of everything else and focus on that, because as you master those, you will start to see light pop on. I've also started to monitor my time diligently. Am I connecting myself to things that are strengthening me spiritually, physically, emotionally, whatever? So if I'm watching YouTube, I'm not watching YouTube for just stupid videos. I'm watching YouTube for things that can strengthen me. If I'm online, am I posting things that can strengthen me or someone else? No time to waste time. Can't do it anymore. And not that I wasted that much time in the past, I'm just being more diligent and careful about how I do it. So other than that, we're great. I'm excited about tonight's show. Tiff is the one that came up with the subject for tonight, and I'm going to go right to it, because I know people like, wait, we're talking about race tonight.
No, we're not going to go right to it. We're going to stick with the routine. We're going
to go right to it?
No.
That's how excited I am. All right, listen. So I guess, you know, I was trying to bypass that sour news that you always give, because, you know, it's the holidays, and I know somehow I'll be sad by the time you finish the news. But no. All right, I'll back it up. So we'll explain to you what we're going to talk about in terms of race later. But Tip is going to do the news, and let's keep our fingers crossed that with being the holiday season, that she gave us some news that's uplifting, because you know Tiff likes to find the saddest news. But please talk about my little man that got the PS4 box. I almost passed out watching that. But go ahead, darling. Tell them what's going on with you.
Before we talk about that video, because I'm going to let you, I'm going to let you post that video in the room, the general question room, so that people can actually watch the video. But before we do that, I just wanted to, I found a article online on Yahoo News where a Texas father is being barred from taking his pregnant wife off life support. And I really found it interesting because it's a discussion that KL and I have had in the past about our wishes if something ever happened and we were no longer basically viable. Like we didn't have any brain activity. Our heart wasn't functioning on its own. Our lungs are not functioning on its own. We both have said to each other we did not want to remain on life support in that state if our brain was not functioning and there was no signs that we would recover from any damage. Well, in this case, a husband found his wife on the kitchen floor when she was 14 weeks pregnant. This was toward the end of November in Texas, and he called 911. He actually performed CPR to her on her, but there was to no avail, and they took her to the hospital, and basically there was no response. There hasn't been any response. It's been almost 4 weeks now. There still hasn't been response, but according to Texas law, they are not allowed to take a pregnant woman off life support even if she has advanced health care directives. And that basically,
is the baby alive, though?
The baby is alive. They do fetal monitoring every day.
Wouldn't that kill the baby, though?
I'm sorry?
Wouldn't that hurt the baby?
Of course. Of course. If they take the mother off life support, because at this time, the baby is only 18 weeks. So it would not even be feasible that the baby would survive outside of the womb at that stage. Usually, I would say the 24th, 25th week, they can take a chance after administering steroids to the mom, which helps the baby's lungs develop, because that's a discussion I had with my obstetrician because of the contractions that I was having, that she was afraid that I might deliver early, so if the contractions continue, they may have to give me steroids to make sure to speed up the functioning and the development of the lungs so that the baby will be able to breathe on its own. Because at 18 weeks, the baby would not be able to breathe on its own. And so at this point, the hospital, they are not allowed, according to Texas law, to take the mother off life-sustaining support even if she had a DNR in place. The DNR is a do not resuscitate order. And basically her husband and her family says that, just like KL and I had a discussion, that we would not want to be on life-sustaining support. The wife had also expressed many times that she would not want to be on life-sustaining support, and the husband and the family would like to remove her. And unfortunately, according to the law, it can't happen. I would like to see, and like I said, they're monitoring the baby every day, and he has a heartbeat, but it doesn't say exactly how the baby was affected, because the husband doesn't know how long his wife didn't have oxygen, which means if his wife didn't have oxygen, the baby didn't have oxygen. So you don't know what's going to happen, how long they'll be able to keep that state where providing nutrition and everything, basically everything is being done through the hospital now because the mother is not able to do it. And I would like to see this be a happy story 22 weeks from now, that they were able to perform a C-section, deliver the baby, and the baby is healthy and
you
viable.
You don't sound like you didn't want that then.
Well,
it doesn't sound like you want that.
The husband doesn't want it. He doesn't.
Wow.
Because he wants to fulfill his wife's wishes, which was not to, you know, be on life support like that. But he also said that at this point, there's no clear idea of how the baby was affected by, you know, his wife being, they believe she had a pulmonary embolism. So that he doesn't know how this has affected the baby. And it just was something I thought about because I said, you know, how would KL deal with that? How would he feel if, you know, he came home and or he walked into the room and I had not been breathing and he doesn't know how long. Now, right now, I'm in my 29th week, which means at this point, the doctors could go in, perform a C-section, take the baby out, put him in an incubator, and do all they could to sustain life for the baby. So, you know, that's an option. But what if I was 18 weeks? What decision would be made, and how would you feel making? How would you feel making that type of decision, honey?
You know what? We ain't got enough show. I don't know. I honestly can't say because I would really need all the information, and Lord knows I'd have to do a ton of praying because you're talking about two lives, and you're talking about the effect of two lives, then you're talking about a third life, your own. And so there's so much that would go into that that it would be very difficult to try to figure out what would be the right way to go. So I don't know. I mean, me personally, if the baby's alive, then I'm a do what I can to keep the baby alive until we can figure out whatever. And if that means keeping you in that state until the baby is able to be delivered without problem, then so be it, because I would have to consider the life that has the longest potential. And if you're in that state and it's not going to change, and of course, the Lord that we pray to, anything is possible. But if that's not going to change, then the focus would be on the child and trying to keep that child as safe as possible. So, yes, I would have to consider just keeping you around until, you know, that time, and then make that decision from there. But that's not an easy one by no stretch of the imagination.
Definitely. So. Definitely difficult.
See, I told you how Tiff, I have you ready to jump off a bridge, man. You know what? Speaking of jumping off a bridge, bad segue, but speaking of jumping off a bridge, did you see the bus driver who was driving and noticed that the woman was on the other side of the railing and pulled over and spoke to the woman, got close enough, grabbed her, and then said, "Do you want to come on this side?" She said, "Yes." And then he sat right there on the bridge and spoke to her. And then the police came, and it's funny that he saved her life because it looks as if she was ready to go, ready to jump. And this is that time of the year when suicide goes up. But he said that. He said, "I believe that I was to be right there at that moment, at that time." And I was like, you know what? I have to respect that. And actually, Donald Trump rewarded him by giving him $10,000.
Wow.
So I was like, wow, okay. And so it's, you'd be surprised, but even though the Lord placed him in that particular time at that moment, he still had to act on what he saw. And I think that's one thing that people forget. The Lord may place you at the right time, at the right place, at the right moment. You still have to make a choice. And for some of us, our blessing is right there in front. He didn't know he was going to get $10,000 for doing that. He knew he had to do something for that woman. Sometimes just doing what you have to do, the rewards will come. And I think we miss that too often because we try to make decisions on how this is going to benefit me. Sometimes you just have to do what's beneficial to somebody else just to save someone else's life. And then whatever happens with yours afterwards happens. And the Lord doesn't forget. He would have been rewarded on earth or in heaven at whatever point. So I'm just happy to see that. So I wanted to bring it up. And I believe that it was a large black brother. I know he was a large black brother, and I believe it was a white woman. And so that's another thing, too. The racial component is that some of us don't pay attention to folks of a different persuasion. You and I, however, when we see people in trouble, we ask all the time, white, black, blue, green, homeless, poor, dirty, rich, you all right? You know, it doesn't really make me a difference.
Yeah.
So
we don't discriminate. We offer help to everyone.
It was just real interesting to see that because it was good to see that that there's still some people who's willing to do for other folks. So just glad to see that. But
so, I wanted to also, it's funny because I came across another article a middle school in Long Island, New York, which is not that far from us, maybe a 15-minute drive, decided that they were having a Christmas pageant, or a holiday pageant, as people like to say, the politically correct term, and they decided they sang Silent Night, but any reference to Christ or the Holy Infant was omitted from the song.
Wow. Now, parents let that rock.
Listen, what's funny is when I read the article, I'm thinking, about, I started singing the song in my head, Silent Night, Holy Night, and I said, wait a minute, how do you remove any reference to Christ from Silent Night? How does it even become a song anymore? Because you can remove, the song is about Jesus being born. So how do you remove reference to that? Now, the funny thing is, the parents didn't let it rock. And what happened is the school said they decided to make the changes in order to not be offensive to those who may not celebrate Christmas or who do not believe in Jesus and God and this and the other, but the parents who are obviously for what Christmas is really about said, well, what happened to offending us? I mean, it was so
absurd. I got a problem. Ain't nobody having no problem with Hanukkah. You know, and no one says anything about Hanukkah. It's actually just Happy Hanukkah, whatever, they toss it in. So why the alteration to Christmas? Like,
right.
Okay, you get it. Okay, Merry Christmas. If you're not Christian, so what? It's like people have gotten to the point that now they just don't even want you to say anything towards what you believe in. But yet we see other religions are free to just do what they want. I don't get that.
And you know what I'm finding, also is that even like some of the Facebook posts, because now that you have Facebook feeds, you can see practically everything that everybody writes. So now I'm seeing posts that are directly disrespectful of the religion. And it seems like Christianity is the only religion, especially around Christmas time, where people become directly disrespectful and attack Christmas. I would never, ever, ever attack someone's religion. I might not agree with it. I might not agree with some of the rituals or routines or, you know, anything. But I would never say, you know, against someone else's, this is your religion, your faith. I'm going to respect that. Whatever you choose to do with it, that is, you know, what you do. But to be just directly disrespectful, like, you know, it's funny because our pastor had made mention to it also at church. Like, they had billboards in Times Square that said, who needs Christ in Christmas? Christmas is about the birth of Jesus Christ. So if you don't want to celebrate Christmas, then don't celebrate Christmas. But as a Christian, I'm going to honor what Christmas is actually supposed to be about. And I just think it's so disrespectful that they would actually take the song and chop it up and not include Christ in the song that's meant to be about Christ. It was absurd to me.
Exactly, which just doesn't make any sense. But you know what? It's it happens, and it becomes a target for many. I don't stress it anymore. I'm gonna praise the faith that I'm a part of, and I'm gonna wear it the way I wear it. And if somebody has a problem with it, it is what it is. Because at this point, I don't try to defend the faith anymore. Folks know what it means to me. And you make whatever decision you need to make for you. So if someone says, well, how could you? Well, this is what I believe. And I'm not asking you to believe anything differently. And you can take it from there. And I don't push or try to force anyone to join the faith. This is what it is. And we go from there. I think when it comes to religion, everyone talks about how you should talk about politics and religion. Listen, I think when you have folks out there trying to indoctrinate other folks and you've seen how bad people do bad things, listen, I try to rock the faith as an example of what I am grounded or what we're grounded by, and that's it. If that moves you to want to come ask some questions, we can have a healthy conversation, and I can explain to you why I believe. If you want to tell me it's, you know, the white man created this and he enslaved people with it, okay. Listen,
I'm not
going to
debate it.
People enslave people every day, but religion didn't enslave people. Men enslave people. So it is what it is. But listen, to each his own. And I don't stress it anymore. And in my walk, in my daily walk, and in my strength, in my quest to be strengthened through my faith, I will gladly open up and talk to someone, because I think one of the best conversations I had about the faith was with a guy who was Hindu. And I remember when I first wrote A Man in Transition, if anybody has the book or has seen the cover of A Man in Transition, in the word transition, there is a T, but it is shaped like a cross. Now, that was my way of paying tribute to my faith with the cover. So the brother was walking by. We was down on Fulton Street, downtown Brooklyn, New York. And he looked at the book cover and said, "Nah, man, nah, I'm not touching that." And I said, "What's the matter, brother?" He said, "Nah, that cross right there, do you know what that has done to people, man? I ain't bothering with that book." I said, "Hold on, brother. That cross on that book has done nothing to anyone. But there are evil men in the world." So he stopped, and we talked, and we kicked it for a good 45 minutes. And he was explaining to me what his Christian background was and how he came to the Hindu faith. And at the end of the conversation, he didn't buy a book, I would love him to. He said, "If more brothers would have spoke to me about God like that, then I would have been able to rock. But too many of these folks out here trying to preach to you." And I said, "I appreciate it, brother." We shook hands. He went his way. The key is, if you're a believer of anything, then you should be skilled enough to have conversations with anyone who would come up and offer anti-views. And you should be able to not counter those views, but to be able to offer something where the person can understand where you're coming from. And then you leave it at that. I knew that brother wasn't going to buy a book, but my thing at that moment was, I have to make sure that he comes away not hating every person that is connected to a faith that he does not like. Now, I didn't change his views on Christianity, but I gave him an opening to at least where maybe he'll listen to the next person who comes along. And that's all we can do. And people are going to do what they do, and that's it. And I've noticed that many folks are going to do what they got to do, and that's it. And we can't stress it. So what else is going on in the news? Anything?
Well, I want to talk about the video. Did you post the video on the general question site?
I'm actually putting it right now. And those of y'all that are listening, go to Facebook groups, bring up GQ general question, join. The video will be in there. All I want you to do is watch Shorty's face when he gets his Christmas gift. I'm about to post it right now, and Tip will explain it. Actually, it is posted, so it should be in there. All I'm saying is watch Shorty's face.
Well, I laugh because we watched it a few times. And, you know, I believe in tough love. I really believe in tough love.
Yeah.
I believe that you should not reward a child for bad behavior.
There it is.
You should not reward a child if they're not doing well in school. And I think today's parents are really, really dropping the ball. Because when I see kids walk around with $500 cell phones, $200 sneakers, and you can't read, that's a problem. I would rather that parent take that $500, $200 and get a tutor for their child. So KL came across this video of a little boy on Christmas who was very, very excited. He was opening a gift, and what was that, PSP2? I don't know the game.
No, the new PlayStation 4, the new one. It's actually in the group. I didn't paste it on the string. I'm trying to figure out how I can post the link to post it. But
okay,
it's in there. If you just go inside the page, you'll be able to see it.
Okay. Well, he was opening he unwrapped the box. It was a PlayStation 4. He was so excited. He was posing with the box. He was talking about how he can't wait to show all his friends how he got a PlayStation 4. He's screaming and jumping around. And, of course, his uncle is videotaping him
and
really amping him up. Really amping him up, like really hyping it up. Like, yeah, you got a PlayStation 4. And I guess it was the mother in the background. She's telling him, open the box, open the box. So he's about to run, hook it up and everything. She said, no, open the box right here. So he's, you know, trying to get the box open. Finally, he opens the box. There's nothing in it. His mother says to him, when you get your grades up, you'll get a PlayStation 4. If you could explore this little boy's face, I cried. I nearly wet myself. And I'm going to get some bleeding hearts. Some people are like, oh, that's so cruel. The mental abuse. How could you do that to a child? Shut up.
because
basically, if you go to school every day and not doing what you're supposed to do in school, you don't deserve a PlayStation 4. You don't deserve a PlayStation 3, 2, or 1. You deserve to sit your butt down and get yourself together. If you could have saw this little boy, he dropped a box, he walked away. He actually walked out of the apartment. He was so devastated. Well, imagine how parents feel when they send you to school every day, they feeding you, clothing you, trying to help you do the best that you can do to be the best person in society, and you showing your behind. You figure, I don't have to learn how to read. I don't have to learn how to do math. Well, they don't have to buy you a PlayStation. So like the mother said, I'm happy that she did it, that he will not get a PlayStation until his grades go up. So I commend that mother, and I don't care who thinks that it was cruel and that shouldn't have been done. He didn't deserve anything for Christmas. Get your grades up. But definitely look at the video. KL posted it on the GQ General Questions page. And
yeah, it's on the page. I'm trying to put it on the string that we're on. But it's in the page if you want to take a look at it. I'll try again. But it is too funny. And you know what? As an educator, I'm going to simply say I am 100% behind this type of behavior toward kids that don't get it. Because you know what? It turns my stomach when I see kids come in with brand new clothes and everything else, and they can't read. Their behavior is suspect, and it's just it bugs me out because I'm saying to myself, how is that the picture? Is that the video? I think I just put the picture. Oh, no, that's the picture. I got to get the video. It drives me crazy because I'm saying to myself, wait a minute, this kid didn't deserve this, but yet you're going to give it to him. Why? And it drives me crazy. And I see kids that come into school. Like I have a kid that he comes in all the time with new stuff. He can't read, and I give him the business. I'm like, yo, your mom buy you all. I just posted this on the string, so anybody that's on the string can check it out. And I give him the business. I'm like, you're struggling. You're a below average reader, and you do math below average. But yet you come in every day, and you want to talk about what everybody else doesn't have and what you do have. Your parents are buying that. How are you going to be able to take care of you? And he says, get a job. And I said, what type of job? And his understanding of life is so unrealistic, but it's being fostered because every day he comes in with new clothes. He's not in shape. He actually has breasts for a young man. And I spoke to him and I said, you know, as a young man your size, you shouldn't have breasts that's actually flopping when you're running. You have to do something about that. Now, I'm a big dude. And I'm telling you, when you go to high school, that's going to be an issue for you. I'm trying to save you. And ain't nobody saying nothing to me. I'm like, okay. Again, it's fostered at home. So whatever you got to do to shock your kids, if giving them an empty Xbox One box is what's going to get their attention, just make sure you have some follow-up application. Okay. You know why you got that? Now, I am willing to give you, but you got to do whatever. Like, let's not make the right deals with your kids. Don't bargain with them to do what's right. Say, if you go above, I'll go above. You don't do, you don't get. Bottom line, it's not that difficult. I watched a father in the store the other day. His daughter kept at him about these chips. He kept saying, no, you're going to Long Island. We're going to two different places to eat. She kept wanting them. And he didn't want to hurt her feelings. Then he just put his foot down. No, you're not getting them. She stormed out the store. And you can see he was kind of, but you know what? He didn't give in. He put the chips up there, the ones he wanted her to have, the ones that he said that they're going to share in the car. And he just went on and bought it. But, you know, the fact that he let her storm away, I had a little issue with, because my thing is you to march your butt right back here, stood right here because I told you to. You're going to do what I tell you to do. Now, some people may say, well, damn, KL, yes, yes.
Right.
Because
you don't get to throw a tantrum because you didn't get your way.
You can throw a tantrum if you want to. You're going to get a tantrum on that booty.
Take this size 10.
And, you know, I'm going to keep it real. Tantrum that ass, as my mom would say. I wish I would have had a tantrum with my mother. My mother would have beat me there in the street, then drove me home and beat me again, probably would have took a nap, got up and thought about what I did in the street and beat me again. And you know what? I understood it. We've gotten soft on our kids. And one of the things that I can say, our pastor said, and I said this on a previous show, you're not going to hurt them. You're not going to hurt them with the spanking. Now, don't try to kill them and make up for the ex-boo that you're not with. But you're not going to hurt them with a spanking. But listen, it is 8:45. We're going to take a 2-song break because I'm excited because Tiff got me talking about this subject of race. And she has some things. She's going to break it down for you because, again, this is a subject that she chose. And normally when Tiff chooses a subject, I kind of want to go get on the couch and go to sleep. But, no, this one.
Really? Really?
No, nah, I'm just joking. I want to see where she's going with this, and she can actually tell you the conversation that she had that prompted this, as well as we could talk about my man from Duck Dynasty and some other things, because a lot of people are confusing in race and religion and other things. But Tiff is going to take you through all that, and I'm going to play her sidekick when we come back. It is the day after Christmas. We're heading straight forward to New Year's. This is Reality and Relationships. Tiffany and myself are excited, and we want you to be excited. We'll be back in 2 songs. Do not go anywhere. Tell a friend to tune in. We are about to play the race card. See you in 2 songs.
Boy, if you ever left my side, it'd be like taking the sun from the sky. I'd probably die without you in my life, 'cause I need you to shine, shine. You're everything to me.
Welcome back to Reality and Relationships. I am your host, K.L. Belvin. And, man, can I get a round of applause for the DJ, man? I know I say this every week, but let's get a round of applause for the DJ because the music is always on point. The music is always on point. All right, baby. Let's get right into this. Darling, what are we talking about? What brought all this on?
Well, you know, it's funny because I was watching some stuff on TV with an anchor woman making a comment that everybody believed was racist when she made reference to white Santa Claus. Then I was
watching.
Everyone
knows that Santa Claus is white or something like that.
Well, actually, I read the article. I'm going to get into that, but of exactly what happened. But then we had the situation with Phil from Duck Dynasty, the reality show. He actually made a homosexual comment that people ran with it, and then also they said he made a racist comment about black people. Then I have
no one had
Facebook.
A problem with his. No one had a problem with his racial comment. It wasn't until he made the homosexual comment that the uproar came and they wanted to, you know, have him removed from the show. And what's crazy is A&E knew that he had very strong views on things. That's actually why they created the show. But the minute that they got backlash that they thought was going to affect their dollars, they got rid of him. But the biggest thing for me is that when he was making the racial comment, no one had any problems.
Right.
It was when he made the homosexual comments that people had issues. So why was it okay for the white man to make a comment about black men or black people and no one say anything? But go ahead.
So then, and you know what's funny? I tend to leave those discussions alone because people are very passionate about what they're passionate about. And I think sometimes in our ignorance, and I'll say our because I include myself, because sometimes we just don't have all the information and all the knowledge. And where our ignorance and our passion, we stop hearing each other. So I tend to leave those discussions alone. But I came across, I was seeing in my feeds from Facebook that many of my plus-size friends in the community or acquaintances in the community were outraged about something that was said, and they were making posts about whatever was said, and I'm looking thinking, what in the world is going on? So apparently, because it's funny, when the plus size community is huge but it's small, so when you start to see different feeds from so many people about the same thing, you go to look to find out what happened. So basically, when I started searching, I found it immediately. I came across one of the young ladies. She's an aspiring model in the plus community. She made a comment about black people. And her comment, and I'm actually, I don't have the details of, I don't have the actual what she said, but just to give an idea,
paraphrase.
Thank you. I couldn't think of that word. I could not think of that word. Good grief. To paraphrase,
got all the time, and you still ain't got a comment. She punching your head, but go ahead.
But you know what happened? Shut up. Anyway, I took a look at what she said, and she made a question of how come it's okay for black people to have all black circumstances or all black events, and when white people do it, they're considered racist, and it. When I looked at it, I said, okay, obviously she's uninformed, and I'm not going to say ignorant, because people don't tend to like that adjective,
because
ignorant.
It has a negative connotation, even though uninformed is ignorant of.
Right.
But when you say ignorant, it is used in a disrespectful term for the most part, so people take it in a disrespectful way. But
right.
She was ignorant to, not ignorant of.
And basically, it just means that you lack knowledge. So I'll use the term
ignorant of,
uninformed.
Ignorant.
So she was uninformed, and I saw the comments that came after it, and then I saw a few of her Facebook friends who basically were encouraging her.
And they were
also
the same racial persuasion of, as her, correct?
Yes, they were of the same racial persuasion. Obviously, she was not black. She was not. She was white. But they were also making comments that you could tell that they were also uninformed. And they were encouraging her, saying, yeah, girl, you just basically had the courage to say what some of us are thinking, this and the other. And then some of the black, of course, plus-size community, they were outraged and made their comments and saying, you know, how ignorant it was and different things. And I said, oh, my goodness.
Let's clean it up. Hold on. Let's clean it up for folks listening, because I remember when you first brought this to me, so I remember holding on to it, that some of the comments of all black parties, black organizations like Black Entertainment Television and other organizations that use the term black in it,
right,
to Black Entertainment Television, identified to be black. And then she didn't even realize that all black parties weren't just for black people. It meant what you wear. She actually thought that it meant no white people were allowed to attend.
Right. And you know what's funny is she wasn't the first non-black person that I've come across to make that mistake, because a couple of years ago when I had a party, it was being hosted by a lounge here in Brooklyn. The dress attire was all black. Now, I personally don't like to wear all black, but this was what they were doing because January is it was during a time for Martin Luther King's birthday are closed. So to acknowledge and celebrate Dr. Martin Luther King, they had an all black celebration. They invited me to have my birthday party there, and everyone had to wear all black attire. So when I gave out the flyer actually said all black party. I actually had a Caucasian colleague come to me and say that she had not planned to attend the party because she didn't think white people were invited. And at first, my first instinct is, like, how stupid can you possibly be? But then I thought to myself, she was really serious that she thought that white people were invited. I said, but you know how I am, and I get along. I try to get along with everybody, that there would be no way, I like everybody, that I would exclude anyone. Anyone would be invited to the party. She said, you know, I wasn't even thinking. I said, but let me ask you something. If you saw a flyer that said all white party, would you assume that it meant only white people, or would you assume that it meant to dress in white? And she said, you know what, you're right, I never thought about it that way. So it was the same situation with this young lady, where she assumed that all black party meant that only black people were invited. So after thinking about it for a while, I said to KL, you know, we need to talk about this. This is one topic that we had not talked about on the show. So I said, you know, we really need to talk about this, because I just think that sometimes, like I said, in our passion, in our own experiences, we get very angry because people were so mad they started defriending her on Facebook. She told me, because we had a conversation after we talked about 2 hours on Facebook, that so many people defriended her on Facebook because of the statement that she made. And she said, you know, Tiffany, I'm not racist. She said she has a black boyfriend. And she actually, she had an organ transplant. It came from someone of color, and she was grateful for that, of course, because it was life-sustaining. She said, so I'm not racist. And I said, well, you know, I don't believe that you meant to be hurtful. And I think sometimes people just get angry, and they don't stop to think, look at the question. Maybe it's something that you could offer to the person to answer the question. I said, but also you have to be mindful of how you present the question. I said, how the question was presented, because I did read it at the time, was very hurtful. And it almost seemed like, not that you took any time to research any type of information on your own, but you just basically repeated something you heard other white people
say.
Yeah,
why don't y'all call Jesse Jackson about that with BT and the black thing?
So,
let me jump in here a second. Let me jump in here a second because I think one of the things that has to be discussed is that with race relations, there are fear, there are emotions, there's anger on both sides. And like you said, when there's not enough knowledge that all that flows out and there's really nothing that is receptive, especially when it comes to color, because we cannot, so many want to ignore the history of this country. So many want
they
to want act
to forget about
as
it.
If
they
slavery
like it
doesn't happen.
Happen.
When we have to, I say, take a page out of our Jewish brothers and sisters' books, where they teach their children, they teach on a regular, do not forget. So it can never happen again. So what happens is, especially with a lot of white folks that I've dealt with, talked to, and especially as an educator, and I am definitely the minority in a lot of situations when I travel as an educator. And it is interesting the way white folks respond, and I'll say white folks respond to me as an educated man of color. And I'll give you an example. I went to Tweed, and that is the central office in 55 Broadway, whatever. And I remember I got there early, and I was sitting down, and the woman came in and said, could you hurry up and clean up the back? Now, I always dress down for professional development. I am not getting dressed up. Hell, I dress down when I go to work. And so I'm sitting there. I got there early like I normally do, and I'm sitting there. Now, there were two other white people in the room, but I was sitting there. The woman came in, looked at me, and said, can you hurry up and finish cleaning up the back? We have guests coming. I said, excuse me? She said, hurry up. We need. And I said, so then I thought about it quickly. She believes I'm a worker here. So I said, no, I ain't cleaning up nothing. The other two white people in the room looked around at me, and they were like, oh, my God, this dude going to lose his job. And the woman looked at me like, how dare you? Did you hear what I said? I said, I heard what you said. I ain't clean up nothing. No, I think about it. I'm going to sit right here. She lost her mind. You are going to, she threatened me. I'm losing my job, whatever, all of that. Stormed out. She came back, I guess with a supervisor, somebody. And she said, who is this gentleman? And I want his name because I want him fired because he is not going to speak to me any way that he wants. Now, understand, all I did was sit down and be black. I didn't do anything else. There were two other people in the room. She did not speak to them. They were both white. They got there early like I did. The dude came around the corner. He looked at me, a brother. He said, how you doing? I said, how are you? I said, can I help you with something? He said, so he looked at her and go, I don't know what you want me to do. She said, he works for you, correct? He said, no. She said, what? I said, you heard him. I don't work for him. She said, well, who do you work for? I said, the Department of Education. Excuse me, what department? I said, this is where the professional development is, right? You're an educator, right? So am I. So is there a reason why you're losing your mind? And now it started to sink in. Now the shoe is past the heel part, heading down the throat. She realized what she had did. But here is where the fear, the ignorance, whatever you want to call it, instead of saying, oh my God, I'm sorry, she basically just sucked her teeth and walked away. You offended me. Now I'm going to show you how things tend to turn themselves around. When the professional development started, as my wife can tell you, even though I may seem antisocial, I know a lot of people and I'm social with a lot of people. When the professional development started, the woman who was hosting the professional development and the woman who is one of the heads of the physical education and health education department in New York, she was talking to the woman who was staring at me for whatever reason. And I'm not going to let her off the hook, so I'm staring back. And I like to have fun, Tiff can tell you. I play with people because when you're stupid, I'm going to play with you, but okay. I walked over and I said, how you doing, Ms. Rosenberg? That was the woman she was speaking to. She said, oh, hi, how you doing, Mr. Belvin? She said, Barbara, have you met Mr. Belvin? He is one of our outstanding teachers from Brooklyn. And she looked at me and she said, oh, we've met. She thought I was a cleaning man earlier. If the woman could have shrank into her rundown pumps, she would have done so. And then she looked like, Did I miss something? I said, it's okay. And I reached out my hand to shake her hand because now you're going to shake my hand because I know you don't like me. And when I say she reluctantly shook my hand, she did. Now, what did I do? What did I do to cause her to feel that way? What was inside her that caused her to react that way? And what's funny is the two women that were in the room at that time when it happened laughed out loud the loudest. And then we went on break. They came over to speak to me. Okay, fine. In this country, racial relationships are so torrid, and they're broken to such a degree that we don't have enough individuals who sit down to at least discuss that not every person of color is walking around hating white people because of slavery. Some of us were just stupid for wanting to remain slaves. We all could have ran off. Many chose not to. I'm dead serious. And then when some of us knew some got away, they still didn't want to run off. Whatever. The thing is, slavery ended in the 1800s, late 1800s, 1865, 66. And for us to now move forward, we have to, one, acknowledge the pain, but then we have to build on it. And we build on it by conversations. We build on it by learning our differences. And one of the things that people will learn, they would come out their own circles, is that
that's one thing. That's one thing I explained to the woman I was speaking with also that had made the comment on her Facebook page. I said, you have to understand. I said, people like to believe, because she had made the comment also, well, you're not in slavery anymore. And I said, well, understand one thing. People like to believe that slavery was so long ago. I said, our generations are not, the African-American generations are not that far removed from slavery. I said, my great-grandmother, who passed away when I was 17, her mother was basically a free slave. I said, so the idea is that's only two to three generations away. I said, keep in mind that even after we became free, so to speak, we were still dealing with the segregation. We were still dealing with, especially in the South, the Jim Crow laws. I said, about 50 years ago, people were still being killed just to exercise their right to vote. I said, 50 years ago, my grandmother is 87. When my mother passed in September, she was 55. That means the two generations right before me, they were still dealing with the remnants of being a free slave. You still didn't have certain rights that were entitled to the white Caucasian.
No, you had them, but citizens. You couldn't exercise them because you got killed.
Them.
Listen,
so
the right to vote
you have a
was
right
given
that
to
you
us
can't
early.
Exercise. Do you really have a right?
No, you're still slave. That's the thing that people understand is all you have to do is look at in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, lynchings had got to 10 to 20,000 a year. Lynchings, where you're just hanging people from trees. White and black people, by the way, got lynched, but majority of black folks. And that one person in the 1950s was shot in the face after a reverend had registered to vote. It was in Mississippi, had registered to vote. He came out, he got shot in the face. They ruled it an accident, said he walked into the shotgun blast. Well, my question as an educated man is, who fires off a shotgun in front of the courthouse? Who fires a shotgun in front of the courthouse that I walk into it and get shot in the face just on the time that I came from registering to vote? So come on. And then you got to understand the Klan was created to scare folks from doing things. There's so much history that's negative. We're not going to go through the history lesson part of it. The thing is, if you don't take the time with the internet, which is a tremendous tool, if you don't take the time out just to do some basic searches, now I'm not asking you to become a scholar. I'm not asking you to absorb all of the African-American, whatever history that you, whatever. I'm not asking you to do that. But when you put statements out about color, know what you're talking about. Black entertainment television was designed so folks of color would know it was a station created to at least represent them because we had no representation. MTV was very selective, downright segregated itself and what they would allow. We forced our way into taking over MTV. Now, I'm not happy with the takeover. I'm not happy with some of the foolishness that's out there. But at one time, you couldn't get you couldn't get a hip-hop video played. You could get a Michael Jackson video played or something like that, but you wasn't getting no hip-hop. And that's where Ed Lover and Dr. Dre were inspirational, because their show opened up the door for more hip-hop being played. But there's so much that is created with black connected to it to send a message out. Like when we say a black-owned business, I'll give you a perfect example. 2 weeks ago, we had on Lauren Green. TransactionCity.com is his website. Now, I mentioned it is black-owned because not only is he a man of color, I want folks to understand who is behind the creation of the website. And if you have not been to the website, it is tremendous because he is giving folks an opportunity to sell their products at no charge. So he wants folks of color to know that it is created by someone of color, but he is not excluding anyone from selling their products. And people have to understand that some of us have elevated to a position where we can say we are a black-owned company. And the reason why we say it is just to let other folks know it is not to be diverse. But unfortunately, there are some who do that. They'll say black-owned because they don't want anyone outside of being black to come in or do whatever. There are those folks. And on the flip side, there's Caucasians that have things that they don't want black people involved in at all. At all.
One thing that we talked about, and I said to her, because when she made the comment, I wanted to get an understanding of where she was coming from, where her basis was. And she said, well, come on, you know, she made the comment about black entertainment television. She said, how come there's a black entertainment television? And I explained to her why black entertainment television was developed. I said, but also you have to understand, I worked for a telecommunications company for 12 years. And what people don't realize, and when people make these comments about, oh, black people have their own television station, that when you go and look at actually the list of channels available to the consumer, usually people stop at what they're interested in, the first 500 channels that interest them. I told her that there are thousands of channels that cater to different cultures and different ethnicities. You will find Television. You will find channels from China, channels from Japan, channels from Greece, Italy. I said, there's so many that black entertainment television would be a little dot within all those channels. I said, but because
every culture has their own station on their own television.
All cultures have their own channels, not just black people. So the idea is, but people don't stop to think about that before they make the comment. And it's funny, honey, that you said that if you don't go to expand your mind with the basics, and that's the same thing I said to her, that when you make a comment and you don't even have the basic information correct, then it makes you look like you're intentionally being hurtful to people who do have the basic knowledge. And that's something, I told her, I said, that's something you can Google. And I'll give you an example, because I said that, you know, sometimes as black people we can be sensitive. And I do understand that.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, we are very sensitive. Because many of our own is just as stupid as some other folks out there. So let's keep it real. Of our own people is, yes.
Yeah, we could definitely be sensitive. And I said to her, no, your comment wasn't racist. Your comment was prejudice, and people tend to interfuse the two, and I said there is a difference, and a lot of times people don't acknowledge that there's a difference.
What is the difference for the people listening? What is the difference between being a racist and being prejudiced? Because many confuse that together.
Yes. Well, honestly, the similarity in both is ignorance, obviously. You don't have the knowledge to basically make statements, form opinions, so you basically say and do things based on ignorance. That's the
thing. Let's look at the dictionary. Prejudice is a preconceived opinion that is not based on reason or actual experience. Then you have another noun, which is harm or injury that results or may result from some action or judgment. So now let's look up racism in this particular case. We'll look up the definition of racism. And the definition
of racism.
Oh, I got it. A belief
okay.
or doctrine. I understand. A belief or doctrine that inherited differences among the various human races determine culture or individual achievement. Usually involves the idea that one's own race is superior and has the right to rule others. A policy system of government based upon fostering such doctrines or discriminations. Hatred or tolerance of another race or other races. Ruling over another race. Not liking somebody because they're black is one thing. When you want to rule somebody because you believe that your race is superior.
Right. Right.
That is
and the difference. That's what I try to explain to people, that you can actually be prejudiced without being racist, because racism means that you feel that your race is superior to another
I may not like a white person, but I may not believe that blacks are superior in certain things. I mean, it's a matter of choice. But now if I start to walk around and say blacks are dominant and I hate everybody else, you crossed over.
And it's funny because I think about my mom. I love her, love her, love her. But it was funny. If you would listen to her, KL used to make jokes all the time about my mother and say, oh, your mother's racist. I said, no, my mother's prejudiced. My mother is an equal opportunity hater. Black, white, red, blue, yellow, green.
Certain types of black, Africans, Caribbean. She was a typical Southern black person that didn't like Africans for no damn reason. Had no idea why she just knew those Africans. Like I said to her once, she made a comment. She said, that Haitian principle. And I said, well, did it matter that she was Haitian? And she said, what? I said, well, you said that Haitian principle, like her being Haitian, added to why she did what she did. I was like, you can't do that. Her being Haitian. And the reason why that struck me is because, of course, my children are part Haitian, and my ex-wife is Haitian. So when she said that Haitian was, it struck a chord with me because I didn't understand what the person being Haitian had to do with anything that she was speaking. And I realized, I said, wow. And that's when I said that comment, I said, mom is racist. And then she said, no, mom, I'm not racist. My mom's prejudiced. And I was like, okay, I get it. And now, preconceived opinion that is not based on reason or actual experience, that is prejudice. And many of us have prejudice views when it comes to other cultures because we lack knowledge of. We do not spend time with. We do not spend time around. And so because of that, many of our views are fed to us through mediums that have no regard of the people that they are hurting. Now, some of them may be because of racist views, and some may be because of prejudice views. We don't know until you've actually talk with the person or you get to see what their agenda is. And many of us just like to throw anything out on the table, just throw it all out the window and see what happens. Now, unfortunately, many other cultures outside of African American, Caribbean, and African cultures, they let television dictate how they feel about, and I'll say us because I'm a person of color. So that way when you meet someone, and like people are shocked when I say I have 3 college degrees. They look at me like, how is that possible? And I'm like, because I went to school. And, you know, remember that white guy in Jamaica?
When we went to Jamaica.
Like, yeah, the guy looked across me and said, yo, what football team you play for? And I was like, excuse me? He said, you know, what sport do you play? And I said, why do I have to play a sport? And he looked at me like, what? I said, okay, I'm not understanding. What makes you believe I play a sport? And now what I'm trying to get him to do is admit that he has an issue with my size and my color. So he goes, I said, what? What is it that made you believe I played some type of sport? I couldn't be here at this fabulous resort unless I played a sport. So he's fumbling all over his words. I said, let me ask you a question. I said, I couldn't be an educator or nothing like that, right? And now he don't know what to say. His wife is shaking his head like, oh, my God, what you done did? So I looked at him and I said, how many college degrees do you have? Proudly, he stood up and said, oh, I have a bachelor's degree. And I said, that's it? That's all? One? That's three. He said, three? He goes, what do you do? I said, oh, now you want to ask me what I do. He made an assumption about what I do just a few minutes ago. But then when I said I'm an educator, he said, really? And the way he said really is what bothered me. As if it was shocking to him that I am sitting across from a table at him in Montego Bay and I have more education than him. So of course, he was dismissed at that point. And I said, you two have a wonderful day, and we moved to another table, because I was not going to be able to change his thinking, because he was so free with his mouth to speak at the beginning. I wasn't going to change his views, but I wanted to give him some thoughts about it. Because in his mind, he had already had the preconceived notion that the only way this big, bald-headed black dude could be sitting across from me and having a drink from the same bar, he must have played some type of sport or is an entertainer. I've been asked, am I a bodyguard? And am I a bouncer? Am I a football player? And all this other foolishness. And I must, does educator ever come out of anybody's mouth? I have a degree in business. I have a degree in physical education, health education, and I have a master's degree in curriculum writing, assessment, and teaching. So not only can I write textbooks, I can show you how to use them, and I can teach teachers how to teach. But yet, all people see is the two earrings that I wear and the bald head and my size, because they're prejudiced. Now, did he think he was dominant over me? Maybe. Maybe if we had talked, maybe that part of who he was would have came out. But at that moment, he's being prejudiced, because he had a preconceived notion of something that he knew nothing about. But if he then tells me that I believe that all white people have the innate right to rule over black folks, well, now he's showing you that he's racist. And at that point, if I don't choke him out, it's whatever. But this is what we have to understand, is that many of us of color feed into the prejudice stereotypes and the racist stereotypes. We give it life because of our behavior.
Right.
And we need to check our own. A great movie, A Soldier Story, actually talks about the inner, when you have a murder and you put it where racism could be at the backdrop, it causes people to think and act a certain way, and it makes people rush to judgment. But Kyle Rowlands, as the lead investigator, his job was to try to see past what everyone kept saying. This is obviously some white men shot this black guy. And as he dug into it, what he uncovered, that there was black-on-black hate, that the sergeant that got killed actually hated one of the other sergeants who had did nothing but been himself, but he didn't like what he represented, backwater, the Geechee, the Yassabaoth type of black man, where he felt that the black man should be a particular way. And you can see how it was affecting the other men. Now, if you've never seen A Soldier Story, you need to sit down and watch it. It's actually an outstanding movie. And some of the men that are in that movie are no longer here. Adolf Caesar, Hal Rollins, I forget the gentleman's name who played Bird or whatever. It's actually C.J. Mathis, not Bird. C.J. Mathis is actually an outstanding movie, because it really talks about how we can get so confused within our own color scheme, with the outside influence of whites not wanting blacks to do certain things. Like, the white officers didn't know how to respond to a black officer. They didn't even realize that they had to salute. He had higher rank. He had to salute him. And some just didn't want to do that. So there's a lot of things that's out there. It makes no sense in today's day and age with the internet that folks are not taking the time to learn, or at least in a safe environment, just really to be able to learn about things without having to fear if you make a mistake. Then when you have a conversation is how you can then get the learning that you need. If that young lady had taken time out on the internet and maybe just did some basic research, now even if she makes that same mistake, she can then go to Tiff and say, but Tiff, when I looked at BET, when I looked at this, when I looked at that, it said this. Was I wrong? Yes. And now let me explain to you why. And you have a dialogue.
Right, and that was something I mentioned to her also, because I said, once you get the basic idea, because she had asked the question of because people have made a, somebody made a statement about minorities, and she asked the question, well, who are minorities? And someone said, she said, well, aren't there as many black people as white people? And I'm thinking, okay, she's, what happened?
I said, not in this country.
And what's funny is I was thinking, she's not serious, right? She's not serious. Like, I'm still thinking, and I told her that I'm still thinking, okay, is she intentionally trying to be funny that you don't know that there are not as many black people as white people in the United States of America? So when we were having a discussion, I said to her, if you actually go according to the census, the government census that they did back in 2010, 70% of the United States population were made up of white citizens. And I gave her another breakdown, and I said, within New York, because, you know, KL and I live here in New York City, New York City is very diverse. And to us, you would think everybody was minority here because it's so diverse. But if you actually did a breakdown of New York State, 65% of New York State is white. And then the other percentage is all other races, not just black. Black, Hispanic, you know, Asian, all other races. So 65% of New York State itself, which is considered the most diverse state in the United States, is white. So the idea, if you break it down, you'll start to see, according to those numbers, that no, there are not as many black people as white people. So she responded, do you really believe that there are not as many black people as white people? I said, I'm not speaking on what I believe. I'm speaking on what the government has said. The government
Listen,
has...
you got Montana, Utah, South Dakota, and other areas that have such a small amount of people of color compared to the amount of people that's in the states that when we only show you New York, Philadelphia, Detroit, Chicago, L.A., Atlanta.
Right.
We only show you so many areas of the country where the bulk of us are. Then folks don't get it. There are whole states out there where the population of people of color are very low in relation to the overall amount of people in the state.
Yes.
And people
yes.
don't believe that because they don't look at those numbers. Just like when you tell people there's more Caucasian people on welfare in the United States than people of color, they refuse to believe you. So I say go look up the census information as well as the government information on who is receiving welfare. And you will see that it is more people in areas that there are not that many black people who are receiving welfare. It is just the way things are presented to you. That
right.
makes you believe that all of us are, like, the whole country is downtrodden for folks of color.
Right.
No, it's not. There are states like Maryland is a tremendously big state. But when you look at how where folks of color might concentrate, we might dominate a particular area. But when you look at a whole state, Texas is a ridiculously big state. But if you look at where we concentrate, then those numbers change, and folks don't get that. Oh, man. I'll tell you what, baby doll. Let's do this.
Yes, love.
It is 9:30. I want to bring this home, tie this up a little bit because, you know, I want to be careful so we don't have people flaming out, wilding out. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back and continue this, and let's talk about the new book that I am a part of that is coming out in a little under 2 weeks. We'll discuss that when we come back. You want to take a 1-2 song break? Two
songs.
All right. Everyone, you're listening to Reality and Relationships on GQ Palace Radio every Thursday night from 8 to 10. Make sure that you tell a friend, tell another friend, and then again tell a third friend. We will be back in 2 songs. Don't go anywhere. Make sure that you come back with us. We will see you in a bit in 2 songs.
No. Zero fucks given.
Can't raise a man.
K. Michelle. Trent Settle.
Trent Settle. different dude. These are the signs of a grown-ass boy. Better run for the hills. I'm just trying to keep it real. You can't raise a man. He's already grown. What you gonna do? You wonder why he acts like a boy. He wasn't raised right before you. Girl, you ain't never gonna change nobody. If he don't wanna, you can't make nobody. Cause you can't raise a man. You'll never lose you. You know that the love has changed. How many times he called you out your name? These are the signs of a grown ass boy. Better run for the hills. I'm just keeping it real. Can't raise a man. He's already grown. What you gonna do? You wonder why he acts like a boy. He wasn't raised right before you. Girl, you ain't never gonna change nobody.
He don't wanna, you can't make nobody. You can't raise a man. No, no, no.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Reality and Relationships. And we are speaking about race relations. And before the break, I'm KL Belvin, and I want to thank you for tuning in every Thursday from 8 to 10. And before the break, we were talking about just the number of people in the country. Now, one of the things that folks need to understand is that there are more Caucasian people in the United States than people of color. Now, depending on where you do your research, some will include Hispanic and black numbers together. Some will separate them. Some will have different categories for each. It all depends. But either way, any research that you do, you're going to see that there's more folks that are non-black that are white in the country. Now, with welfare, what I just recently and just doing some recent looks is that welfare has actually changed, and that now, and I guess it's due to the recession, there are, let me just give the numbers the correct way to make sure I have it right, that I went to statisticbrain.com, which had welfare statistics from the Department of Commerce, and this is dated 9/10/2013, that there are 12,800,000 people, Americans, on welfare. 46 million, over 46 million that are on food stamps. There are a total number of 5.6 million that are receiving unemployment insurance, and that's 4.1% of the United States that is on welfare. Now, this is what is interesting. 38.8% in the demographic is white. 39.8% is black, and Hispanics 15.7%, Asians 2.4%, and other recipients, which I don't know what other would be. What is other if you're not Asian, Hispanic, black, or white? But that's 3.3%. I don't know what other is. There's no designation.
Maybe they were identified,
I guess, but if you're not Asian, white, or black, or white, whatever. Anyway, but it's kind of interesting that we are now neck and neck. So let's put this in perspective. 40% of a large number is still a large amount of people, but 40% of a smaller number is a tremendous percentage, even though they're both about the same. But you got to look at the numbers of people. And if we only make up, I think when I looked at the West End, it's 29% of the United States is made up of folks of color. Of that 29%, it's 40% is on welfare. Now, I don't think it's strange at all that the Asians in this country, 2.4, because if we would take a tip from other cultures, from other races, just think for a second. Have you ever seen one of your Asian brothers and sisters in class fail? Did you ever see one of your Asian classmates failing? And if they were failing, it is because they were hanging out with either black folks or white folks. Let's keep it real. Now, I'm an educator. I'll call it, and I'll
That's
stand on what I'm
honey.
Talking about. I'm not, no, I'm keeping it real. No, it's not prejudice. It ain't prejudice. I'm asking folks that's listening to think about the Asian students that were in their classroom that understood the English language. Let me switch that a little bit. Because unfortunately, some that don't have grasp of the language have problems. But Asian students who have grasped the English language, how many of them have you seen fail in school? I haven't seen many. And when I have, it's because their associations, or they become Americanized, or they've taken on American behaviors. But even with that said, now if it is prejudice, I apologize. Like I said at the beginning, we all have prejudice views, but I'm not basing it on something that I don't know. I'm basing it on what I've seen as an educator and what I've seen from kids in the classroom. But to have such amount, and the fact that the numbers are similar, that's even interesting too, is because we don't know what the other groups are doing, because many of us don't come out of our own circles. Just like you said, that's prejudice. I'm basing my views on logic from information that I've seen that I was a part of, not something someone told me, not something that I saw on television, not something that I read in a magazine. But nonetheless, you had a couple of people we need to bring up too. There was a couple of people that I just thought and just a couple of things. Bring what we talked about off during the break. Bring those things up now. You had mentioned earlier.
Well,
I thought was interesting too.
I had made mention of Megyn Kelly, which is the anchor woman who made a comment about Santa Claus being white, and everyone was in an uproar. And it was so funny for more reasons than one. When I initially heard the story, I was not moved emotionally by it. I did not care that she thought
Santa
Claus was white.
I could care less about Santa Claus, but go ahead. Yeah.
Right. That was my take on it. Like, really, are we really going to sit here and argue about the color of Santa Claus? But then I went to research to find out what brought on the conversation. And it was funny because the initial conversation on her show was sparked by an African-American woman named Aisha Harris, who wrote an article about how she suffered like some type of identity crisis because she always saw a white Santa Claus, and how she didn't understand why Santa Claus was always white, how come there wasn't a black Santa Claus. So basically Megyn Kelly, the anchor woman, was responding to what was written in this article online. And what she actually said, because they have the transcript here, is she said, "I kind of laughed, and so I said, this is so ridiculous, yet another person claiming it's racist to have a white Santa. You know, and by the way, for all the kids watching at home, Santa just is white. But this person is just arguing that maybe we should also have a black Santa Claus. But, you know, Santa is what he is, and just so you know, we are just debating this because someone wrote about it, kids." Now, what's funny is even someone could say that...
That's prejudice, but go ahead.
They could, but you know what? The thing is, that's the initial reaction. Oh, that's prejudice. But let's think about it. Traditionally, Santa Claus has been white.
Yes.
When
so it makes sense to why people would believe. But okay. Oh, yeah, I got you. I'm not
so
even going to debate that. You're right.
Megyn Kelly was basically just reiterating what Aisha Harris said, that Aisha Harris acknowledges that she had an identity crisis because she always saw a white Santa Claus. Megyn Kelly is basically just confirming what she is saying. Traditionally, Santa Claus has been white. Now, I don't care about Santa Claus, honestly. But in your home, if you want to make Santa Claus black, make him black. If you want to make him Latino, make him Latino. If you want to make him Asian, make him Asian, make him Indian. But I can't believe that people were in such an uproar because Megyn Kelly said that Santa Claus is just white. Because honestly, if you ask me, and I'm African-American, of course, he is. Because that's what traditionally I have seen. Now, if in my home, if we believe in Santa Claus, in my home, my parents didn't teach about Santa Claus. So from a little kid, the gifts under the tree came from my parents working very hard for them.
Yeah, my mom wasn't going for that, you know, Santa Claus. Like, she's like, we ain't got no damn chimney, so I ain't even going to start telling that. Ain't nobody, because my mother was like, my mother's borderline. My mother's prejudice, I'm going to keep it real. My mother was like, I ain't teaching y'all to no damn white man sneak into our house and put no gifts under the tree. I work too damn hard.
And basically, we never believed in Santa Claus from the beginning. And I honestly, you know, to each his own, how they deal with their children, we will not be teaching KL about Santa Claus. We will teach KL about Jesus Christ. But
yep. Now, that's an argument about Jesus being black.
And you know what's funny? I was just about to mention that because I remember when I was younger, I was probably in my early 20s, late teens, that I was on my way to work. I was going to the train station, and we had a group of men, the Black Israelites, who would stand outside the train station every day preaching and just, you know, saying all types of things. And I remember I was walking minding my own business. I'm sorry?
I said they scare white people too. They be getting at white folks
because they're very militant and they have no filter. And sometimes they offend me. Sometimes, so I can imagine how people. Yes, I can imagine how people who are not black feel. But I was going into the train station, and of course they have their boombox and their microphone, and they're yelling all type of different things. And one of them said to me, sister, because, you know, they're very respectful initially. So he said, sister, let me ask you something. Is Jesus Christ black or white? And he was not prepared for my response. I said to him, what difference does it make? He's my Savior. And he looked at me, and he was like, okay, you have a good day. Because the reality is, if you believe
but
in Jesus
on.
Christ.
But hold on. Now, this is what people argue. In Revelations 1:14-15, I'm going to go to church on you for a hot second. His head and hair were white like wool, as white as snow. His eyes were like flame of fire. His feet were like fine brass, as refined in a furnace, and his voice as the sound of many waters. Now, people have argued that with a head and hair were white like wool. See, people say like wool because it says texture. To me, it says color like wool, which means it doesn't say what texture the hair is, but people have morphed that into saying, well, his hair was like wool. No, it does not say that. It says white like wool. And then when it says his feet were like fine brass, well, fine brass is brown, especially refined brass once it's been put into a furnace. So a person said this was an older person with white hair and brass feet, that he had to be a person of color. That is, and you heard Denzel mention it in the movie.
Malcolm X, give the credit to what's in the Bible and the description of Christ.
But it doesn't really matter.
If you truly believe that he's your Savior, does it matter? You know what I'm saying? It shouldn't matter if you truly believe. To argue whether he's black or white is trivial. It's so minuscule that you done diminish God from this all creator.
Like, why does the color
to the color of his skin? Who
like
cares?
Like, heaven has a section for brothers. And like heaven only has a section for the brothers. Y'all stand over here. This is the only part of heaven y'all get. It really doesn't make any sense to believe in this. Like,
heaven is segregated now.
That's why it says
in,
and God is everyone. So what you see as God is what works. And I think that's something that people need to consider. Last thing is the chick, the CEO that got fired.
Yes. When KL and I mentioned the difference between races and prejudice, the CEO, her name was, no, she wasn't a CEO. She was actually a PR executive, Justine Seiko. And she worked for a communications media company called IAC. This is the difference between prejudice and racism, because a lot of things that we touched on tonight was prejudice. Her comment was racist. She actually put on her Twitter page, she was on her way to Africa, South Africa actually, and she tweeted, going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS, just kidding, I'm white. The reason why this would be considered racist is because she has basically made a statement as if being white would make her beyond getting AIDS. Not the fact that she would use protection if she decided to, you know, do whatever, or that she would decide to abstain from any sex, but the fact that I'm white, I'm not going to get AIDS. That's a racist comment. It's not prejudice. So she lost her job, which, you know.
She lost her job before she got off the plane.
Yeah, she did. Yeah. And the crazy thing is she has, from what I've read, she has deleted all of her social media, not just Twitter, Facebook, just all her social media, because she caught such a backlash. And you know what's funny? She only had 200 followers on Twitter. So that fast, putting something like that into the air, that fast, within the flight time, because it was a 12-hour flight. So within that 12 hours, it went viral to the point it reached enough people that before she got off the plane, she lost her job. Can you imagine?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, for one, I'm all for speaking up for yourself and, you know, saying what's on your mind and, you know, keeping it real. But when you're in a certain position as a PR executive for a major corporation, there's certain things that unfortunately you just have to keep to yourself or in private conversation where you hope no one's recording you if that's the way you feel. Because to me just didn't make any sense.
Well, you got to be, this is the hypersensitive world that we live in, and you have to be very careful. And you know what? To me, I don't really get emotional about it anymore. If you're stupid enough to put stuff out there like that, just like these people who put their pictures and stuff out there, and they don't stop and consider the damage it does, and then when they lose their job, they whining and complaining. Come on, man. This is the world that we live in. This is what the situation is. You cannot live that way, and you just can't make comments like that. And it just shows no tact. It just shows no respect. And if you're joking like that in social media, how are you in your private life? And you're a CEO, which means you're handling people's lives. Now, do we now go back and start to search everything that she's done to see how many people maybe did not keep their job because they were a person of color? See, this is what opens the door. This is what it opens the door to.
And that's what people don't realize.
Do we start to look? Yeah, now you tipped your hand, then we go back and look and see that, you know what, you've elevated only people that are white. My old principal, Jewish principal, loved her to death. She crossed the picket line of Oceanville, Brownsville in 1969, stood with black parents and said, black children need black teachers. She was ran out of the building because black people started to call her racist. And I stood with her and said, y'all are crazy, but if you can get enough people to think this whatever, they will go for it. And a parent coordinator who did not like the fact that he had gotten fired drummed up and concocted this whole thing about she was racist and got all of Canarsie to believe that this woman was a racist, and they wound up walking her out of the building. And you know what's crazy is that she stood, that she had more black history in her actions than many of the same black folks who were yelling and screaming, because when it came time, as they say, to pick up her cross, she crossed the picket lines instead of standing with the Jewish folks who she was Jewish, and stood with black people and said, and proved that, because when I was teaching, she always said, young black men need strong black men as mentors. And she always let me do what I had to do as a teacher inside the school. And so here she was, run out the Board of Ed because of the way people treated her. It's ridiculous. But listen, we have a couple of minutes left. I want to take this time out to let folks know, January 7th, I have a new book that I am a part of. It is called Soldiers of the Cross. It is a Christian fiction anthology, and I am excited to no end, because I am working with two other tremendous authors, Maurice Gray Jr. and Isaiah David Paul, and we are going to show you that there's many different roads to the cross, and the company, the publisher, is Solomon Waterwine. And they asked me sometime last year to write my story, and so it's going to be an outstanding, outstanding book. The secret is on January 9th, the book comes out on the 7th, on January 9th, we are going to have all of us together, Maurice Gray Jr. and Isaiah David Paul will be in the house to talk about the book. We're going to discuss the whole process and what we hope the book is going to accomplish. We're also going to invite Isaiah's wife, Allison D. She's the one that designed the cover. So we want you to really tune in 2 weeks from today as we discuss the book, Soldiers of the Cross. If you come to my Facebook page, you will see my cover page is the cover of the book. We are hoping to really do something with it. So to all my friends in the kingdom, share this with your brothers and sisters. Tell them they really have to get behind this project and support this project. It is a Christian fiction anthology, but anyone who enjoys a good read will enjoy these three short stories. But the stories are not that short. They're about 25,000 words each, about 30,000 words each, so you're getting a good 60 to 50, almost 75,000 word book If you purchase it, it'll be available on Braven Publishing, www.bravenpublishing.com. It's going to be $14.99. And I'm telling you, it is going to be an outstanding piece of work. So tune in 2 weeks, and you will get to listen and talk to all of the authors, all of the authors that make up the book, and we're going to have some fun. So I just wanted to put that out there before we end tonight's show. Honey, always fun to do this show with you. I hope that we have shined some light on it. We stayed away from some of the more controversial stuff, because just going back and stuff over stuff that stirs up a hornet's nest for no reason doesn't get anybody anywhere. We hope that we gave you enough to go on to lead you to do some research for yourself and check the numbers out for yourself. So if you have this conversation with someone at work tomorrow or in your circles, the whole white-black thing, you come from a point of intelligence, not one of ignorance. So with that said, I want to say good night, and thank you for tuning in to Reality and Relationships. Make sure you tune in next week and every week afterwards, and have a happy new year, because it is our last show for 2013. And so we want to wish you well, and we will see you next year. Darling, what you want to leave them with?
I'm just going to say, I actually enjoyed this topic tonight, and I hope it enlightened some people to understand that you can open a line of communication without being offensive and defensive. And I hope that people take that information with them and start to better relations within the races. So I'm looking forward to next year and what it has to bring. And God bless.
We will see you next week. God bless. Happy New Year.
You know I love you, right?
Love you too.
Ain't nobody got what we got.
No, no. What I be with my baby.
Yes. Said built from the concrete, baby. Don't get no better than this.
I just wanna give you, make love to you, put you on a rocket flight.